Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into a case that really highlights how something seemingly simple, like saying yes to a job offer, can get pretty complicated legally.
Absolutely. We're talking about Panhandle Eastern Pipeline Co. v. Smith.
Right. We'll be digging into what makes an acceptance legally binding, you know, what makes that yes stick, and also how courts figure out what losing a job actually costs someone. It's often way more than just the hourly pay.
Definitely more. And for this deep dive, we're leaning heavily on the actual court documents, the legal arguments from both sides, and analyses of the case. We'll look at the main ruling and also Justice Thomas's dissent.
Okay, so our mission here is to really clarify how contract acceptance works in employment law and how courts weigh everything up when a contract is broken. Hopefully you come away with a solid, practical grasp of these ideas.
Let's get into it.
All right, so the story itself. Yeah. Smith versus Panhandle. What's the background?
Okay, so this goes back to 1979. Now, Alan Smith Jr., he worked for Panhandle Eastern Pipeline Company, and they fired him. Yeah. He then went through the union grievance process. Panhandle initially stuck to their guns, said the firing was justified, but later they offered him his job back, though with some specific conditions attached.
Ah, the conditions. And this is where the twist comes in, right? Smith signs it, but adds something.
Exactly. He signed the reinstatement offer, yeah, but he also wrote in a couple of notes by hand. Uh-huh. And these notes basically said he was holding on to all the rights he already had under the union contract. Things like, you know, being able to file grievances later on.
Okay, so he's saying, yes, but I'm not giving up my existing union stuff.
Pretty much. And that's what Panhandle latched onto. They argued his notes turned it into a counteroffer.
Meaning? He didn't just accept their offer.
Right. Their view was he'd rejected their offer by adding terms and was proposing a new deal instead.
Hmm. But the courts didn't see it that way.
No, they didn't. The trial court sided with Smith, actually awarded him $40,000 in damages, and the Wyoming Supreme Court agreed they upheld that decision.
Wow. Okay. So the big legal question became, did Smith's yes with those extra notes about rights he already had, legally count as accepting the job offer?
That was the core issue. And to figure that out, you have to look at how contract acceptance generally works in law.
Okay, lay it out for us.
Well, the basic rule is that the person making the offer, Panhandle, in this instance, gets to say how it should be accepted. They can specify the method.
Like, sign here, no changes.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But here's the crucial bit. They have to make it really clear if that specified method is the only way, like absolutely exclusive.
Ah, so unless they explicitly say this is the only way, no deviations allowed, then maybe other ways of accepting could still be valid.
You got it. And that brings us to this idea of immaterial modification.
Immaterial, meaning small changes that don't really affect the main deal.
Exactly. The law says an acceptance can still be good, even with minor additions, if those additions are just asking for something that was sort of already implied in the original offer anyway. It's about the substance, not just ticking boxes perfectly.
Okay, that makes sense. So connecting that back to Smith.
Yeah.
His notes about keeping union rights were seen as immaterial.
Correct. The Wyoming Supreme Court agreed with the trial court on that. They found his handwritten notes just restated rights he already had under the union contract.
Because Panhandle hadn't said acceptance must be absolutely clean, no notes.
Precisely. Panhandle hadn't made unmodified acceptance an explicit, exclusive condition. The court actually said something like, an acceptance is effective if the addition only asks for something implied from the offer. Minor stuff that doesn't change the core bargain is generally okay.
Right. He wasn't trying to get a raise or different hours, just clarifying existing stuff.
Exactly.
So what would have been a counteroffer then? What kind of note would have messed it up?
Well, if he changed a fundamental term, like if he wrote, okay, I accept, but I need $10 an hour, when the offer was less.
Or, I'll take it, but I need an extra week of vacation.
Yeah, things like that. Those change the core economics or terms of the deal. That would likely be seen as rejecting Panhandle's offer and making a completely new one, which Panhandle could then accept or reject.
Okay, clear. So Smith did legally accept the offer, but Panhandle didn't reinstate him.
No, ultimately they didn't follow through after he accepted, so that put them in breach of that reinstatement contract.
Which leads us to the damages. How do courts figure out what that breach costs, Smith?
Okay, so the standard starting point for damages in contract breaches like this is what the employee would have earned under the contract.
Right.
Minus what they actually did earn or reasonably could have earned from other work they found afterwards.
Sounds fairly mathematical. Wages lost minus wages earned.
On the surface, yes. But it gets much trickier when you factor in lost benefits, healthcare, pensions, that sort of thing.
Ah, yeah, those have real value. How did that play out for Smith?
Well, this is interesting. His wage at Panhandle was $8.35 an hour, but the trial court looked at his whole package, benefits included, and valued it at $12.52 per hour. Okay.
Now, the new job he found paid $12.50 an hour. Very close, right?
Almost identical, yeah. So you think damages would be tiny?
You would.
Yeah.
But the court still awarded him that $40,000 because they looked deeper. The key takeaway here is that a job's worth isn't just the hourly rate, it's the whole bundle.
So what else did they consider besides the direct pay and the calculated value of benefits?
This is where it gets into what we sometimes call intangible losses. Things like job security, the stability of the work, the overall working conditions.
Intangibles. Like, how secure did he feel in the Panhandle job versus the new one?
Exactly. His Panhandle job came with a union contract, which usually means more job security, grievance procedures, things like that. His new job didn't have a pension plan, didn't have that union security. Plus, his hours were apparently less stable in the new role.
So the trial court basically put the whole Panhandle package on one side of the scale.
Right. Valued at $12.52 an hour, plus the stability, the union protection.
And compared it to the new job at $12.50 an hour, but without those extra benefits and security. Precisely. And they concluded that even though the hourly pay was similar, Smith was actually worse off overall because he'd lost those valuable, though maybe less tangible aspects of the Panhandle job.
Okay, but I imagine listeners, especially law students, are wondering, how on earth do you put a dollar figure on job security or unstable hours? That sounds fuzzy.
It is fuzzy, no doubt. And courts admit you can't get mathematical precision here. It's not like calculating lost wages down to the penny.
So what's the standard?
They use a standard called reasonable certainty, based on the evidence presented, testimony, comparisons, expert opinions. Maybe the court has to make a reasonable estimation of the financial impact of losing those things.
Reasonable certainty. So not just pulling a number out of thin air, but a reasoned judgment based on the facts.
Exactly. There's a legal principle often quoted. Damages need only reasonable certainty, not mathematical precision. The trial court looked at the differences and made its best judgment on the value lost.
But I remember you mentioned Justice Thomas had a different take.
Yes, there was a dissent. Justice Thomas argued pretty strongly against this approach.
What was his view?
He felt that damages should stick strictly to the measurable stuff, primarily the difference in wages and maybe quantifiable benefits. He thought trying to value intangibles like job security was just too speculative.
Too much guesswork involved.
Essentially, yes. He worried it could lead to inconsistent or arbitrary awards depending on how a particular judge or jury felt. A real disagreement on the scope of damages.
Interesting contrast. Okay, so we've walked through the case, the acceptance issue, the damages debate. Let's pivot to why this matters for our listeners. For the future lawyers out there, what's the takeaway?
Well, for anyone drafting contracts, especially employment offers, the big lesson is clarity. Be explicit. If you, as the employer, need acceptance in one specific way with zero changes, you have to spell that out very, very clearly in the offer itself.
Otherwise, you risk a situation like Panhandle's, where notes are added and it still counts as acceptance.
Exactly. Ambiguity can cost you. Clear drafting prevents disputes down the line.
And what about for, anyone signing an employment agreement? An employee?
It highlights that you need to be careful. Even small notes you might scribble on an acceptance form could potentially have legal meaning. Understanding what makes your yes valid is really important before you sign. Don't assume a little note is meaningless.
Good point. And there's a broader principle here too, right, about how we value jobs.
Absolutely. The big picture is that courts don't just look at the salary number when they assess the value of a job contract or the harm caused by losing it.
They look at the whole thing.
The whole package. Base pay, yes, but also benefits, healthcare, retirement plans, and even the less concrete things like the stability and quality of the work environment. It's a much more holistic view.
Not just dollars per hour, but the total value proposition and the security that comes with it.
You got it.
All right, let's wrap this deep dive up then. Key things we've hit. Valid acceptance needs you to understand the offer's terms, but small, immaterial changes usually won't sink it unless the offer explicitly forbids them.
And when it comes to damages for a broken employment contract, courts can and do look beyond salary. They consider the full package, tangible and intangible, trying to assess the real-world loss with reasonable certainty.
It really shows how contract law gets applied in the messy reality of employment.
It does. It's about the overall value and security, not just numbers on a pay stub.
Okay, so final thought to leave everyone with. Think about how this plays out today. This case is from a while back. How might these ideas apply in, say, the gig economy?
Good question.
Where job security is different, benefits are often non-existent in the traditional sense. How would a court value the loss of maybe flexible hours or the potential to earn from multiple gigs?
Yeah, how do you apply reasonable certainty to those kinds of losses? It definitely makes you think about how these established legal principles might evolve or need to adapt as the very nature of work keeps changing around us.
Something to chew on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.